It's that time of year when we reflect on what we have and where we are, and simply give thanks. Yes, today, it's a very special episode of Sidebar Forever. Just kidding, but not really. Dwight suggested the three of us sit down and take a look back at 2020 and make note of some things for which we're truly grateful. Dwight tells a story about a scene from Guardians of the Galaxy 2 that he relates back to his late father. I, Adrian, discussed losing my own father earlier this year, as well as being there for my mother. And Swain celebrates mentors and surrogate parents via the films Antoine Fisher and Jingle Jangle, the new Netflix Christmas special. And believe it or not, amidst all the deep reflection, we did manage to get a few chuckles in there to lighten the mood. Another thing we're thankful for is you, our listeners. We appreciate each and every one of you checking in with us on every episode and following us wherever you get your podcast. And if you live in the States, please have a happy and very safe Thanksgiving.
Good morning, Dr. Silberman. How's the knee?
Did you just have a brain fart?
I know Taekwondo.
Stop eating my sesame cake.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Fuck with me, and we'll see who shits on the sidewalk.
Come quietly, or there will be trouble.
Clearly, I wasn't talking to you, big titties. You cherub-looking motherfucker.
While you were still learning how to spell your name, I was being trained to conquer galaxies.
The real question is, what are those?
Back to the way it was.
Yeah.
Today's topic is kind of an interesting one, and is kind of very apropos in terms of where we are currently visiting a new holiday in 2020. A strange year for us all. It's about Thanksgiving. And what I wanted to discuss in particular about Thanksgiving was just things that we're thankful for, and also possibly some of the media things which stimulate a certain kind of, you know, intimacy, a certain kind of, you know, joie de vivre, a certain kind of interesting feeling inside us, makes us feel thankful for who we are as people and our friends and surroundings and things like that. So when I talked to Swain about earlier, I mentioned something in particular. It was one of many things, but one that got me was in the Guardians of the Galaxy of all places. It was watching Peter play in the second Guardians of the Galaxy movie, watching him play ball with his father, Ego, and how he's playing catch. And that was something that me and my father did. It made me feel all warm and fuzzy inside. You know? And I was like, something simple like that, in terms of like how certain visuals, certain moments can bring back a moment of gratefulness and reaction is one of the things I want to discuss today and see how you guys felt about that. What do you guys think?
Well, when you brought the topic up, I thought this was a great moment for us to, you know, really emote, you know, our feelings, mm-hmm. because as you said, 2020 has been just quite the year, just absolutely eventful, you know, as we can all attest, you know, mm-hmm. both in society at large, but mm-hmm. also personally as well, mm-hmm. you know, and I guess I'll start off by saying that for myself, it really began at the beginning of this year, mm-hmm. When my father passed away on January 23rd, you know, January 23rd, 8:15 p.m. Like I remember it exactly. Exactly like it happened just last night or something. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was, and, you know, even though I had steeled myself, so to speak.
Right.
Because I was the one before, you know, everything, you know, transpired, you know, just getting everything into place, making sure that, you know, my mom, you know, and family, they knew what was going on so that when it occurred, when the end finally occurred, mm-hmm. that I would be able to come to action, so to speak, and have myself gathered so that we could, you know, go ahead and move forward with the arrangements and so forth. But, you know, when it did happen, I was the one that had to make the calls.
Wow.
And one of the things I never, ever, ever want to hear again is the sorrow of my mom.
Yeah.
I never, ever want to hear that again.
Yeah.
And, man, I tell you, you know, just from there, you know, the rest of the year, you know, I find myself, you know, thinking back, you know, about my dad. You know, mm-hmm. I delivered, mm-hmm. you know, the eulogy at his funeral. Even when I talk about him, you know, to my daughters and just, you know, speaking, you know, of him, you know, just there are a lot of things that, you know, will invoke his memory. Like, you know, you and I, Dee, we were on a Sean Connery tribute episode
yeah.
that we just did a couple of episodes back.
Right.
You know, we were talking about, you know, that third Indiana Jones movie, The yeah. Last Crusade.
Yeah.
And just about how, you know, Indy and Connery as his dad.
Right.
And just that moment, like I said, where, you know, Indy, he has the Grail in sight
mm-hmm.
and he's reaching for it. And his dad is telling him, no, leave it. He's like, yeah. but dad, I can get it. He's like, no, right. you're more valuable to me.
Right.
I don't want to lose you.
Exactly.
You know, and reluctantly, Indy pulls back. And that's how I felt in reverse about my dad.
Mm.
It's like, he was trying to hold on for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just seeing him there. And I whispered in his ear and I was telling him, I was like, Dad, I was just telling him, like, man, well, not man, but Dad, it's.
I know what you're saying.
I was just like, Dad, it's okay. If you're fighting to stay here for us, you don't have to, you know?
Wow.
We will be okay. I promise you, my brother and I, my sister, we will take care of Mom. If you're fighting to stay here, you don't have to fight anymore. And I remember telling him a couple of times, you know, in his ear, I was just telling him, you don't have to fight to stay here. And he just seemed like he was in so much pain, you know, at the end and all. And so it was almost like him trying to hold on. That was almost his grail, so to speak. And I was the one telling him, I'd rather you be at peace. I'd really rather you have a long and well-deserved rest. Just, you know, Pop, you're good. You're good. Mm-hmm. So when he finally did, it was, in spite of the pain afterwards, the immediate pain, and the pain that continues today, you know, with our family, it was just a relief. I was more relieved for him that he had just, you know, found his rest, you know. And, just that thing really defined the year for me. And, you know, as you guys know and other listeners may know and friends and acquaintances, you know, I'm on, you know, dialysis myself. And I was diagnosed with kidney disease almost 3 years ago now. And so with my dad's passing, it really put that into base relief for myself. It's like, Adrian, you're a father now.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, you're kind of the rock for your mother, for, you know, my mom. She really looks to me for a lot of things. So, you know, there's really no time for pity. And you know that your dad, my dad, would not have stood for that. He would have told me, Adrian, you know what you have to do. You're a man. So you need to go and do that. You have a lot of responsibilities. And he, in fact, he told me that before he wasn't able to really speak anymore. He told me that as best he could. He said, you're a man now. Everyone is looking to you, you know, so you need to go forth and do that. So like I said, that defined my 2020 and my attitude going forward. and continuing to. You know what I'm saying? So what I'm thankful for, to kind of tie it in, I'm thankful that I was able to handle the just that extreme situation, you know, and deal with all of those feelings and, you know, family and arrangements and just everything, and come out the other side and continue to do so for my mother, you know. And I'm just thankful that I'm still in relatively decent health, you know, in spite of, you know, my kidney disease, and right. that I'm able-bodied and, you know, just truly, you know, just able to be there. So that's one of the things I'm thankful for, man. So,
wow, I mean that's how can you follow up on that, man? It's a powerful and provocative vision and statement. Having lost a father, I know what it's like to lose one, and I know what a pivotal moment it becomes in your life, and it changes everything, man.
It's
a hole that can never truly be filled. But at the same time, it's like I'm thankful for having been blessed, for lack of any other word, with great men, great friends, great male friends in my life that have that have kind of answered the call that I didn't know I had inside of me to fill those moments.
Yeah.
So anyway, what about Mr. Fantastic?
You know what, Adrian, you were talking about your dad, and you were talking about, I remember when he had the stroke, and you were doing a lot of the back and forth, going to see about him, and to help bathe him and take care of his hygiene, and just trying to, like you said, going back and forth to try to really in some ways intercede, on behalf of your mom, because she's a senior age person herself. And she couldn't handle it, and I remember a story you told me. I remember a story you told me, and it was funny because I remember another friend of mine telling me the same exact story. So, old school dudes tend to be, from that real man, cut from tough piece of leather kind of a vein. So, and Adrian's father sounded like that in terms of, the things he shared with me. But I remember you saying you were over at your dad's, and you were giving him a haircut.
Yes.
And he looked in the mirror and saw the cut you gave him, and he got pissed off. and you said he tried to throw dukes with you. He was so pissed off.
Swizz, man.
That's girl, awesome.
I was just
that's
like, awesome. Wait a minute. Hold on. And it's so funny. He laughed, but he chuckled about it later when I was telling him, because I don't think he realized what he had done at first. But when I told him later, I was like, Pop, why were you swinging on me? I thought you had a stroke, yo. Why was your left side moving? I was like, dang, yo. That left That's side awesome. Came to life for about 5 seconds. I was like, man, you was Joe Frazier. You was smoking Johnny Johnson.
Hey, man.
Oh, man.
That's an example of what they call old man strength, yo.
Yeah, man.
That's hilarious, man. I forgot about that till you mentioned that, Swain.
That's awesome, man. What a great memory, man.
What about you, Swain? What are you thankful for, man? Yeah, man.
A couple of things. Okay. One, over the course of the last probably 2 years, I've noticed, like, I've in having conversations with my mom, and, it's just, call her up, and, we start talking, and You know, and as you get older, your parents become less like parents and become more like friends in a way.
Yes.
At least that's the relationship that she and I have really started to develop now. And I was telling somebody else that, you know, the conversations I'm having with her now, it's like, okay, you find out a lot of things about your parents and their past, you know, once you get older and once that, you know, your relationship crosses that threshold from parent to kind of like peer.
Right.
And so I'm kind of grateful for some of the conversations that we've had, just as far as, you know, things that she shared about, you know, growing up in Chicago. You know, my mother came from a pretty rough upbringing. You know, my grandmother was an alcoholic, and was not the greatest person in the world. My mother was exposed to a lot as a kid and really had to endure a lot as a kid. So, you know, just hearing her talk about those stories and about my grandmother and my aunt and some of her cousins and, you know, just some of the things that have happened in the past, you know, when she was living on the South Side of Chicago, things have been really revelatory and have been important to me because it's almost, you know, like I'm kind of documenting them, you know, for myself and, you know, maybe to one day, you know, relate some of that to my own child, you know, as far as that's concerned. So I'm grateful for those one-on-one conversations that I'm having with her. And some of the things that she's sharing and some of the, you know, some of the insight I'm getting into, you know, her past, you know, growing up. But another thing I thought about when Dwight was mentioning it, and, you know, he was talking about, like, you know, watching movies or television shows or, you know, reading comics or novels or whatever. But, you know, engaging with media and, you know, and in the engagement with media, like, you know, Dee mentioned with Guardians of the Galaxy 2. You know, it kind of brings you back to your life and things that have happened to you. Mm-hmm. And I thought about, I can remember years ago when the movie Antoine Fisher came out. You know, starring Derek Lukes, directed by Denzel Washington, and Denzel Washington plays a small part in the movie. And for those who haven't seen it, Antoine Fisher is a real life biography written by a guy named Antoine Fisher, who was abused as a child and ended up in the system and passed around. And, you know, he finally ends up in the Navy. And while he's in the Navy, he encounters Denzel. It's kind of like Denzel's his superior officer, but he's a therapist. And then, you know, and then Fisher's character kind of goes on an emotional journey to kind of come to terms with the trauma of his past. And he ultimately ends up reuniting with his, you know, with his biological family at the end of the film. But I remember seeing that film. It was like a Sunday morning. Yeah, I think my wife was sleeping in the bed next to me, and I don't believe maybe my daughter was born by then. I'm not sure. It was quite a while ago. But you know, I'm watching it, and you know, I got to the end, and you know, he goes out. He's in the town where his new family or where his biological family is, and you know, there's nobody there, maybe one person. And then he says, well, I'm going to so-and-so. I'll be back later to try to, you know, just to say, you know, goodbye to you before I leave. And this is like an aunt or like a distant aunt. She says, okay, well, yeah, come back later. We'll talk again. And so he leaves with his girlfriend and goes and does what he has to do. And then when he comes back later, the aunt has called all of his extended family members in town over, and they brought over food, and they had this big banquet and party for him. And they're like, hey, I'm your uncle so-and-so. I'm your cousin. I'm your this and that. And you can just see the look on the character's face, you know, it was like, okay, you know, finding these people that love him. And I remember tearing up watching the movie, you know, at that scene. Because I feel like to a great extent, you know, with children, you know, part of what, whether they succeed or whether they don't succeed, in life and as people, as human beings, it kind of comes down to some extent, you know, you have to give them a chance. You know, that's why, you know, the robbing and the stealing of innocence, you know, when they're so young is such a terrible and evil thing. You know, you have to give them a chance. You have to encourage them. You have to kind of, you know, you have to push them and push them in a positive way. So, anyway, I remember being really moved by that. The other thing it made me think of was for myself, you know, in my life, I've always been grateful for like mentors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to some extent, surrogate fathers or surrogate parents. So, mm-hmm. you know, my father, and my mother, you know, they divorced when they were, years ago when mm-hmm. I was young. And we moved from Chicago to the Atlanta area, specifically College Park.
Yeah,
and right. I remember many times over the years, you know, kind of finding like what I needed at the time from people in my life who were, in some cases, older than me. And more experienced than me, or had something that I, you know, that they were good at, or that they knew about that I didn't. And in some cases, it was, you know, people who were, you know, my age, but they still were beyond me in a way. So, you know, the earliest is probably Dwight and I's mutual friend Don Hilsman,
mm-hmm.
you know, who is an artist and you know, was a comic artist for many years. And
mm-hmm.
You know, when I met Don, you know, I was telling Dwight and Adrian in our text exchange. You know, Don is really my biggest artistic influence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I know a lot of people say, oh, you know, Mobius or, you know, Bob Peak or, you know, Mark English or, you know, somebody like that. Right. And, you know, certainly along the way, those people became heroes and were people that influenced me.
Right.
And people whose work I cherished. But, mm-hmm. you know, Don was, you know, I was 16, Don was 18. You know, mm-hmm. Don exposed me to Creepy and Eerie mm-hmm. and to the artists, you know, Angelo Torres and Wally Wood and Joe Orlando and, you know, all of those people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I found out, you know, who I knew Neil Adams was, but, you know, Don knew, like, details.
Right.
You know. you know, and, you know, Don's the first person that gave me that, you know, 21 Panels at Work by Wally Wood. You know, so, you know, in inking and painting and, you know, he knew about painters and, you know, Alex Toth, just tons of stuff. You know, all those, mm-hmm. all the people that, you know, whose work, again, I cherish and who I do consider to be artistic heroes, mm-hmm. you know, he was the one who exposed me to a lot of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and that was, you know, like Dee was saying earlier, that was a pivotal point in my creative, the path I was on as a wannabe creative person. You know, to have met him and to have that.
Right.
You know, and then later in life, you know, my buddy Albert Burroughs, who ran the recording studio that I worked at for many years and, you know, who trained me mm-hmm. as a recording engineer. And,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, again, probably my biggest musical influence for whatever, you know, thimble full of musical talent I have at this point,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's because of him.
Mm-hmm.
And what he exposed me to and what he taught me and the people that I was exposed to, you know, in his studio and, you know, every brick in the wall, you know, built the wall as far as that's concerned. So Albert would nice. Be another. And then I had a good friend that I met when I was working at Hertz Rent-A-Car for a couple of years mm-hmm. as a young guy. And I met my friend Donald Floyd, who was older than me. Maybe about 10 years older than I was, but, you know, Donald was, you know, really well spoken and, you know, carried himself well and, you know, he knew about, you know, how to move in the world and how to kind of navigate people and how to read personalities and, you know, he knew how to, you know, how to dress and, you know, things like that. And then,
mm-hmm.
you know, I had never met anyone who had, you know, who was really sharp in that way, you know, and he mm-hmm. was a really friendly and fun guy and kind. As a matter of fact, if I showed you a picture of him, he's a spitting image in many ways of MLK. He looked like MLK. People used to walk up to him on the street and just point.
Right.
You know, he looked like MLK.
Right.
But he was another. So, you know, it's happened more than one time. And, you know, it's always really important to me to kind of acknowledge those mentor figures. And, you mm-hmm. know, I bring all that up because we watched the Christmas movie Jingle Jangle on Netflix.
Okay, yeah, you mentioned that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we watched it last night, and okay. And it's pretty good. You know, it's a Forest Whitaker and Felicia Rashad and Keegan Michael Key and a bunch of really great character actors in the movie. But Forrest Whitaker's character plays an inventor named Jangle. And, you know, he ends up, you know, old and disillusioned. And he has this kid, this little kid who's his granddaughter's age, named Edison. And Edison, you know, idolizes Jangle, even though Jangle's glory days are way behind him. He's kind of been, you know, he's fallen on hard times.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a point in the movie where he's, you know, Edison is, you know, saying, you know, you're the greatest. And you're the greatest inventor. And he says, I'm not an inventor. And he says, neither are you. And you just see the dashed look on Edison's face when he says that to him. And then, of course, later in the film, Edison and Jangle's granddaughter, Journey, you know, they, you know, sneak into the factory where, you know, Edison's, quote, enemy works, and they steal back, you know, Jangle's invention, and they're running from the enemy's henchmen, and, you know, they're running down this corridor, and they barely escape and barely get out, and they do, they kind of end up doing so with Jangle's help, and then, you know, he hugs the kids, and Journey says, yeah, you know, Edison was the one who came up with the idea for this, and he says, oh, quite the inventor, and then you see the light come back in Edison's face.
Wow.
You know, because he's been...
There's a metaphor for you.
Yeah, he's been validated
right
by his hero. And you just see, you know, you just see the spark come back, you know, where he was encouraged.
Right.
You know, by his hero.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Yeah, man.
I was really, just really grateful, you know, for mentors and mentorship. And I try to be sensitive, you know, for times when, you know, that may be needed of me by someone who's younger than me, or, you know, and maybe I have something that, you know, that they need, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah.
I thought about, just to kind of lighten the mood a bit, but there's a quote from the movie, of all movies, Hustle and Flow.
Okay. All right.
Wow. Okay. Why not?
To go ahead and bring the mood all the way up.
Right.
And I, you know, that's a trash movie with piece of shit characters. It's a great performance by Terrence Howard. I'll give it that. But I mean, how I'm supposed to be rooting for a guy who's a pimp and who's basically exploiting, you know, women and sexual slavery, you know, fuck him forever until he dies. But there's a point at the end of the movie where he's in jail and he's talking to another character, and he says this, and this is the part, the only thing that's redeeming in the movie to me. He says, this little girl, Keisha, she's going to dream large like kids do, you know. One day she's going to ask me if she can grow up and be president. Now, I know this girl got a hole for a mama, and some trick for a daddy. And nobody knows where they're at. He says, but I tell you, Key, I'm going to look at that girl right in the eyes, and I'm going to lie. Because sometimes you got to. Yeah. You know, and he's just talking about the idea that you have to encourage them. Even if it seems impossible, even if you know that all the odds are stacked against them and they probably won't succeed, you still have to encourage them.
Wow.
So I was really, really, that's the only grateful thing I have from that movie.
Man. Yeah, man. Well, you know, Swain, it's interesting that you bring that up, because, you know, I was thinking of that myself quite a few times this year after my father passed. And, you know, it's apropos that you mentioned about seeking mentors or having mentors come into your life, you know, whether that's for a season, because sometimes, you know, we do have people, you know, friends, acquaintances, whomever, that enter our life. I believe, I know this is getting metaphysical, so to speak, but, you know, they enter your life truly just for a season to get you from here to here. You know, mm-hmm. they're not supposed to continue to ride with you all the way. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And,
right.
You know, I'm also thankful for that, because in many ways, you know, yourself, Dwight, quite a few of my other friends, you know, have, you know, filled that gap for me, you know, and it's that's kept me afloat,
you know, this year as well. Just being able to have that, the support, the love, the friendship, the brotherhood, mm-hmm. you know, of you guys, the sisterhood as well, mm-hmm. you know. And I'm not sure if I did not have that, if I would have been able to make it through a vast part of the vast majority of this year, you know. Mm-hmm. like naturally, I know people on the outside, you know, think, oh, he's a very buoyant person. He has a buoyant, you know, personality. He's able to bounce back from this and that. He seems pretty happy-go-lucky. Mm-hmm. That's on the exterior. It's like toast. Sure. Has a very crusty exterior, but on the inside, you're soft right. and warm. Right. You got to get past that crusty exterior first.
Right. And you might have to put a little. You might have to put a little butter on it too.
Yeah. Exactly. A little butter. Yeah. Some syrup. You know.
Right. Some jelly on there. Sweeten it up.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's how it is for me, because mm-hmm. I know myself, and I know if I did not have that. Crusty exterior would definitely take over. Mm. And I've been in that place where it has taken over. And I look back and I'm a totally different person. Mm. When I met you guys, you know, I was kind of coming out of that. You know what I'm saying? And you guys, your friendship and other things as well, you know, in my life, brought me fully out of that shell. And I look back and I said, I'm never going back to being that person again. That was so toxic and everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just like you're saying, Swain, just, you know, looking for mentors. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I look at that with my own children as well. You know, like, I'll be frank. My oldest, she's, you know, kind of struggling in school. She's reaching those teenage years now. And, you know, mm-hmm. when you're a teenager, you go through changes.
Sure.
You right. know? And so trying to encourage her too firmly, but also realizing that there's some stuff she needs to discover herself too, mm-hmm. you know? But you want to just be open enough to, you know, have your heart open enough that she can come to you with anything. Mm-hmm. You don't want to just be totally firm all the time.
Right.
You know, you have to have that leeway to where you can also mentor her. You can love her. You can say, basically, the door to my heart is open right. anytime you need me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I take that responsibility with other young people as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's young people that, you know, we love to complain, you know, as like, you know, guys our age, just like, man, these young whippersnappers, man, these young dudes, man, he tripping.
Mm-hmm. What? Right, right.
What are y'all doing? but every once in a while, there will be a younger person, you know, that will enter your life, and you do get a sense of they're open and they're receptive, and you want to fill that receptacle, mm-hmm. fill their glass with something that's going to nourish them, that's going to help them going forward. You know, mm-hmm. you just, I mean, so much, frankly, bullshit out there that they can see on a daily basis, an hourly, a minute by minute basis that will have your head swimming, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the quest, especially in this day and age, is like, man, get something that's going to sustain you, something that's real.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Fuck all the fake news. Fuck all of this bipartisan whatever. Just, man, what is real? What is going to nourish that person? What is going to mm-hmm. nourish us as a society, man, so that we can start, you know, really healing? I know that's some We Are the World type shit, but...
Right.
We really need that, man.
Adrian, but just what you're saying, man. Man, we are the world, dog. And, mm-hmm. you know, like, the police said a long time ago, one world is enough for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That's all we have. So we fuck this up, it's over.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We can go to Mars all we want to, you know, we can go to the moon all we want to, but you know what? Mm-hmm. There's no proof of anything that would sustain life for a long period of time. So we got to get this right now for our future, for your children, for your daughters, for your, you know, sons of daughters, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If we don't get a second chance, we'll get this right, man. So without getting too political and trying to scale it back, I mean, cut you off, either.
No, you're good. Continue. Do you?
I never see myself as a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm too, you don't want to follow my path. like my man says, if you try walking in my shoes,
mm-hmm.
But I do try to reach into myself into a place where the things I've learned, the things I've surrounded myself by, and people I've coalesced with, I try to give that back to people that are open, like you said, to be receptive to it. And I find myself in a situation now at work where there's a young man that needs that guidance, but he's got so much dogma already built up to a point where I can't even traverse that wall. I'm not strong enough. I'm not tall enough. I'm not high enough to do that. And I just give him the best. I give him fruits. I give him little pieces here and there that hopefully he'll take on to. But man, he's so far gone, man. I don't know if there's anything I can do to help him, man. I'll try. You know, I'll do the best I possibly can. But man, he's gone. He was gone when he came through the door, man. And it's sad to see that kind of thing. I'm not writing him off because it's not just me. There's other people which can affect him too. But man, when you start from a place of negativity, it's hard to get back to the positive. If you're so far gone that you can't even begin to see that you are gone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's bad, man. And he hasn't given me much insight to his life, and it's none of my business, quite frankly. But I can tell, just from having experienced people in the past, where he is, and I can see that he's on the precipice of doing something that's not going to be good for any of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's frightening to some degree. I'm on guard with him, but then I'm not. Like, I'm from Chicago. I ain't scared of them motherfuckers. You know what I'm saying?
You know, like Bernie. Saying?
Yeah, like Bernie, you know. But you know, at the same time, it's like I'm conscious and I'm wary, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in terms of, going back to It's Hard Out There for a Pimp and that whole movie, I will say this for Terrence Howard and for Taraji. They parlayed that into a TV series that was arguably helpful for some people, and arguably not helpful for some people. When I say people, I mean like of African-American descent.
Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it was popular, and it was entertaining.
Right.
And, you know, their stars were on the rise, began to rise as a result of the movie and then the TV show afterwards. So, yeah.
Right. So, yeah, you know, so I'll give them that. But, so back to other movies that and entertainment points that meant something to me in my life. Everybody knows the old Stanley Maxim of which escapes me right now. Peter Parker, Spider-Man.
With great power
comes great responsibility. I do often feel like sometimes like it's upon us to have been exposed to multicultural. See, the secret to our evolution, mine in particular, is not the fact that, you know, I read comics, but the fact that comics exposed me to more than one particular idea and thought string. You know, it opened my mind to want to read Shakespeare, opened my mind to wanting to read Gibran, opened my mind to wanting to read, you know, Carl Sagan, various other individuals, and expounded my mind beyond the present and the reality of a hard-ass childhood. You know what I'm saying? My childhood wasn't super, super hard. You know, my mother and father got divorced. It's a little more complicated than that, but we'll leave it at that. And I was pretty much the oldest son, or whatever the case may be, and I'm left to do my own devices and things like that. And, you know, but I had a early great foundation, man, that I could reflect on with my father at a young age that really, really put me in a position to be able to receive those things that I got from Swain, I got from Don, I got from Adrian, and the list is endless of mentors, man. And when I say mentors, they were my peers, and sometimes they were even like like, well, obviously just friends. I didn't look to them for that, but it was an osmosis thing where by being in their presence, I got those things, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm grateful for that. And you know, I'm a big sucker. I'm a big baby, man. I mean, any movie that has that for me, any television show that has that, don't be blatant about it now. I'm too old for that shit now. You can't be like, this is a story of Eddie and his father. You know, I can't.
Right.
I'm way too old for that. You know, you still be at that courtship of Eddie's father.
Hey, man. Best friend. You know,
hey, that's still my jam, yo.
Yeah, man. Bill Bixby, man. She rocked that shit, dude. You know, anytime I see like a brother to brother relationship of kindness and virtue, I'm with it. What else can I think of in terms of? That fateful bus ride, man, to Oxford Bookstore. That's always a tilting point for me, man. Meaning you, Don, meaning Swain, Adrian, not Adrian, meaning Swain.
Not me, not yet. I was three,
though. Feels like I met you back then. That's how long.
That Google and shit.
Right? That's how intense.
I'm sorry, man.
It's okay. But that's how entrenched you become in my life, man. That's how much a part of my life you become to. It's like there's no point in separation in time for me, for you. You know, it's like I've known you for a long time. I've known you for, to me, as long as I've known Swain and known Mike and others, you know.
Likewise,
so, but that was definitely a faithful day for me, man. You know, I'm very grateful for that. But I'm going to give you guys listening. I wrote something that's kind of sing-songy and kind of rhymey, but not too hopefully so, that kind of basically encapsulates how I feel. And it goes, right. It goes, Thanksgiving. The indigenous peoples that sacrificed their time and freedoms. My ancestors that fought in wars and died in bottles of alcohol and stupor to forget. So my father showed me Gabron and taught me how to catch and respect for oneself means to get it from everyone else. Character is something you develop from within, not a facade. To my mother who taught me empathy and how to cook and clean. To my brother how to show and share and not be so mean. To the women I've loved who taught me the intimacies beyond touch, tender and rough, and every deed matters and to capture and captivate with intent. To my brothers from another mother that I learned so much, Swain, Adrian, Bernard, Roberts, Mikes, I know a lot of them. Bruce, Don, Brad, Jim, Warren. Thank you for creating diversity and examples of thought and vision. I appreciate you guys. That's what I have to say. So thank you.
That concludes this episode of Sidebar Forever, hosted by Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson. You can find us online at sidebarforever.com. Any emails or questions can be directed to us at sidebarforever@gmail.com. And also, subscribe to us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Sidebar Forever is copyright 2020. Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson.